Hey, am I a loser?
No. Why do you ask?
Meet Siaya, an Inuk woman who lives in Canada's north. North of North, actually. And she just, well, blew up her perfect life.
Without any sort of plan. You know, no job, no ride, no home.
No clue.
Lily!
No, she's right. I have no clue what to do next.
North of North is a new comedy series that follows a young Inuk mother, played by Anna Lam. Siaya just faced a very public and very embarrassing breakup with her husband, Ting, who so happens to be Ice Cove's golden boy.
It's a long-ass wait list, but you can ask Elisa before a housing application.
Thank you. I will.
Siaya. You did what you had to do.
Danse, Anine, Boujou, hello and welcome. This is Unreserved. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. A unique sitcom offers a new way to see Canada's Arctic through Inuit humor.
A lot of people think everything's like really sad. A lot, yeah. Like, and
cold.
Hard up there. Yeah. So we wanted a world of joy and warmth.
Yeah.
In the Arctic.
And a survivor story within a play, within a doc, that is healing generations.
The show itself is so visually engaging and beautiful, and it just made me excited to see how we can present it in a way that audiences haven't seen it before.
Today, an Indigenous double bill featuring humor and healing. Ten years ago, students and teachers at Strathmore High School in Strathmore, Alberta, created a production called New Blood. The play was inspired by the life of Chief Vincent Yellow Old Woman, a residential school survivor from nearby Siksika First Nation. Although the students were proud of the work they had created, they weren't sure how many people would come out to see it. By opening night, they'd only sold 4 tickets. But by the end of their run, the students were performing in front of sold-out crowds. Their powerful performance captured the hearts of their community.
You get 9 years for rape and drug deals. 9 years for a major crime. Or 9 years in a residential school to kill the Indian in the child.
Generations have been affected and had to remember how to pray, to rediscover a sacred culture and find forgiveness along the way. For years, he spent nights searching for a love he couldn't find in the walls within his prison, in the eyes that had gone blind.
That's the poem that opens the theater sensation New Blood. What started out as a high school play done for credits is now 300 shows strong and still being produced for stage. And now, New Blood the documentary gives us a behind-the-scenes look at its legacy. New Blood the Doc sets the stage for an emotional conversation between Vincent Yellow Old Woman, his grandchildren, and others involved in the play. Adam Solway is the Blackfoot filmmaker behind the documentary. Adam, welcome to Unreserved.
Hey, Rosanna, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So take me back to when you first saw New Blood the play, or did you see the play? How were you first introduced to it?
Yeah, I wasn't too familiar with it prior to the doc. I grew up on the east side of the reserve at Siksika, and I went to a different school. I think when I graduated, that was around the time it was starting. A friend of mine, he's a producer, his name is Austin Lettister. He was actually developing the doc about a couple years ago, and then he was looking for a director, and then he ran into my work, and then he reached out to me about a year and a half ago and said, hey, like, you want to collaborate on this, you can direct, I can produce. And yeah, so I said yeah, and then saw the show for the first time like about a little over a year and a half, and then since then just been living and breathing New Blood. So yeah.
Yeah, when you saw the finally got to see the play, what was your reaction? How did it touch you?
It was, I don't know, it's something that I it's not too common, you know, like you don't see a lot of like Blackfoot stories presented on stage, especially like a high school production. And I was thoroughly impressed. Yeah, like seeing it for the first time, it made me feel things. And because I, you know, all my grandparents are residential school survivors, and they went to the same schools as the elders in the show, and it just hit home immediately, and I had an instant connection to it. And just from like a filmmaker standpoint, like the show itself is so visually engaging and beautiful, and it just made me excited to see how we can present it in a way that audiences haven't seen it before.
What were some of the things about the play, you know, for people who haven't seen it, that really made you excited to want to tell the story behind the story?
Yeah, I think obviously it's Vincent Yellow Woman and Eulalie Run Rabbit. They're sort of the elders of the show, and both of their stories, they kind of inspired sequences in the show. So obviously, like, their stories, hands down, was like, you know, one of the most like exciting and nerve-wracking things, because, you know, I really want to get their stories right. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the first things I did when we went into pre-production. It was like I sat down with them, they invited me to their homes, and then, you know, I listened to their stories and make sure I got every detail right. And then from then on, then I felt confident enough to say, okay, I know what we need to do and how we go about this in the right way. So yeah.
That is a really beautiful way to start, by talking about the people that it's about, right? Mm. Some of the other beautiful elements of the play itself are the use of George Littlechild, the artist, his work, and the music of Peter Gabriel, which is very unusual. How are you able to bring those elements into the documentary New Blood?
Yeah. Like I said, like those two aspects, like George Littlechild's artwork and obviously Peter Gabriel's music, they're both very integral to the show. Like visually, George's Littlechild's artwork is projected onto the stage itself, so all the choreography, dance, you know, it's all on the backdrop of his artwork. And also, you know, the dance choreography is set to Peter Gabriel's album New Blood, and, you know, like I really had like no expectation going into it. Like I was telling my producer Austin, I was like, man, it's gonna be a long shot if we ever get the rights to his music. You know, we might have to find different music. And I just thought that, you know, it would be incredibly hard to show the show without it. And luckily, Deanne Birch, the theater director, she started a conversation with Peter Gabriel's team. And then luckily we were able to get permission to do that. And also George Littlechild, he was very gracious enough again to let us use his artwork in the documentary. And I couldn't imagine this documentary without both of their participation, for sure.
Yeah, it might be a little challenging to do a documentary about things if you're missing elements, right? And in the doc, you know, you put the viewer right in the middle of the performance. You almost feel like you're there and experiencing it from within. What was your thought process behind doing that?
Yeah, I think it was just like a natural sort of thing. It was like, okay, like, you know, people have seen the show probably hundreds of times, like from the stands. Like, how can we make that sort of different for this documentary? So I thought, you know, maybe what if we're on the stage with the dancers and the choreography? What if we're following it? What if we sort of, you know, as if we're like dancing with them on stage, you know, like what if we try that? And then, so yeah, we asked the production to put on a private show for us. And then we had our cameras and yeah, we just like worked with them and it was super fun. We just, our camera operator, Josh Boak, he's a very nimble guy, so he was following everybody on stage and trying to stay out of the way, and he did a really good job, so yeah.
It's like a bird in there sometimes, just going around in circles and zooming in and out. I was like, it was very immersive and quite powerful.
Awesome.
And the other approach that you took as a filmmaker is that you had, you know, Vincent and Eulalie and the cast and all the survivors and those in the production interview each other rather than you interviewing them. Why did you take that approach?
Yeah, very early on, I think when I started to talk to everybody, like Vincent and Eulalie, even like the younger generation, like Trinity and Hayden and Deanne, and there were just so many people. And I was just like, you know, like it's going to be pretty difficult and it might get kind of boring fast if like everyone's sitting in a room and like just talking off screen. And like, you know, there's so many different people, there's so many different relationships, you know, let's pair them off together. And I think you know, different relationships will show and different things will come out of that. So yeah, so that was like one of the ways we wanted to just show the audiences like how just like close everybody is. And you know, obviously, you know, the younger generation, they say stuff maybe not in front of the older generation and vice versa, you know? So there's different things that come out, and we were really pleasantly surprised of the amount of emotion and responses we got from that.
Yeah. One of the more emotional moments of that decision, it was the interaction between Vincent and Hayden when Vincent talks about escaping from the residential school.
I don't know if you can see it right here. There's these guys crawling out the window. Mm-hmm. It was in the middle of the night. And what I got was a group of us got together. We tied all our bed sheets together. And we threw that bed sheet up. So this picture speaks volumes of what took place in my life. I'm not sharing something that others shared with me. This took place in my life.
The response that Hayden had to that story, was there many of those moments as you started making the documentary?
Yeah. As a Black person, you know, that's one of the ways I've experienced stories as well. Like I've sat in my grandparents' house and visited with them and had those conversations. So, you know, we just tried to sort of kind of create that space in the documentary. And, you know, when it came to those hard conversations about residential schools and stuff like that, you know, we just made sure to make everybody comfortable and, you know, allow a space for those emotions to sort of pour out. And I'm incredibly thankful that, you know, Vincent and Yulayla, you know, and even the kids as well, they're all very open about the things they've experienced and things they want to talk about. And yeah, it was just such an honor just to sort of try to facilitate that and make sure that, you know, people are comfortable sharing those things. Yeah.
That can be challenging to create a space that's comfortable because, you know, residential school stories are hard and heavy and difficult to listen to, much less speak about. How were you able to ensure that safe space for both Vincent and Yulayla to be able to, you know, support them in telling those stories?
Yeah. I don't know. I think, you know, like being from Siksika like helps a lot, you know, like, I'm probably, I am the same age as their grandkids and kids, you know? So like, I think there's that level of, you know, and they know my grandparents as well, you know, like they, you know, I think that helped a lot. You know, they knew I was somebody that, from their community and understands of where they come from. And again, like they're both sort of very open with that. And, you just kind of have to go at their own pace, you know, like I wasn't there to sort of like prod or like dig deep or anything. It was just like, okay, like let's just sit down. You know, I had a list of questions and I would ask Hayden or Vincent to be like, okay, maybe ask them about this. And then it just sort of naturally sort of goes into those conversations. And, you know, once they get them all out, we just take a break, make sure everyone's okay. And yeah, you know, it's, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but it's just like a very, it's just a very organic sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, sharing stories like this, difficult or, you know, even funny or silly can be a healing experience. And as somebody whose grandparents also went to residential school, how did it affect you making this doc?
You know, like I said before, it was kind of it's a roller coaster. Again, I was very thankful to be making this. And I knew that sort of weight these stories held. But also like throughout the editing process, well, when we were shaping the doc, because, you know, obviously we had hours of footage and conversations and stuff like that. And we sort of like picked sort of the best pieces. But, you know, listening to these stories over and over again, and it's hard. And we just tried to make it, you know, fit right for the, you know, not just for the sake of having it, but also just for the story itself. You know, like their stories are integral to New Blood because they've inspired New Blood, and New Blood itself, you know, it's they say in the doc, it's a form of healing. You know, we need to talk about these things. We can't be afraid of sharing these things. We need to speak for those who can't. So, you know, I kept those sort of like phrases in my head while making this. You know, it's important that we need to do this and make it. Yeah.
Yeah. Eulalia Running Rabbit, who co-directed the play along with Deanne Birch and is a survivor herself, called New Blood, the play, a healing play. How do you think that this behind the scenes look adds to that healing?
Yeah, I think it just gives people who are new to New Blood another, or even people who have seen it throughout the years, you know, like I think it gives them a new window into the stories and the people behind it. I think our documentary really, you know, like it shows of where, you know, all the stories come from, what inspires it, but also what it means for the current generation, you know, the kids who are, you know, carrying out these things, you know, like Trinity, like she's, you know, she's a main actor. She's been a main actor for over a year now. She's still doing it. Like she's doing it day to day, you know, like she's traveling with the whole production and stuff like that. And, you know, that's, again, I hats off to them. Like I couldn't imagine doing that for for that long. It's, you know, it's an incredibly hard thing. So.
She's an amazing, amazing performer in the play.
Yeah.
And Trinity, of course, is, no, help me out here. She is the granddaughter of Eulalia?
She's just, I don't think by blood, but I think Eulalia takes her as a granddaughter for sure. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, Indigenous family structures are, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Everybody's your cousin. Yeah. I'm your favorite cousin, so for example.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, New Blood is a story, as you said, from your nation, many connections to the story and to residential school itself. How do you hope this documentary will continue to keep the legacy of Vincent and other survivors alive?
Yeah, that's something that I've been thinking about. You know, not even just with this film, with a lot of the other films I've seen and a lot of the work I do outside of this. And like our elders, they're getting older. You know, it's very difficult to imagine a world where they're not here. Like out of my four grandparents, just my grandmothers are here. And, you know, like they carry a lot of the stories, the language, the teachings. And, you know, I think we just need to do our best to try and remember those things, you know, spend time with them. You know, while they're still here with us. I think New Blood is another form of that, you know? Like, we've spent a lot of time with the elders here, with Vincent, Eulalia, but even the kids as well. And in our Blackfoot language, they would say, "Itzi damabi." You know, it means, you know, you got to enjoy these times because they may not always be here. So those are the things to sort of think about. It's just, we need to just kind of keep these things going. And yeah, it's for the next generation, right? So.
Yeah. Have you had an opportunity to show the documentary to the people involved and how did they react?
Yeah. So like on the day of when it premiered on CBC Gem, November 22nd, we did our first community screening at Strathmore High School. So we actually, yeah, we played it for them and invited everybody out, you know, Vincent and his fam, his grandkids, and, you know, obviously like Trinity's family and everybody, you know, even people from the community in Siksika and Strathmore, they came out. And it was awesome. It was a bit nerve-wracking for me as a filmmaker because you're like, oh man, like, you know, you get to show something that you've made for somebody. So it was a little bit nervous, but I knew, you know, I was confident that they would like it. And they did, you know. I was sort of like in the back listening and, you know, there was a lot of, you know, sniffling and, you know, a lot of people, they really enjoyed it. And also just the conversations we had afterwards, you know. You know, community members stood up and they talked about their own experiences and they it just created like a whole other dynamic that I didn't really expect, you know, like people, it made them feel some things and they it was awesome. So yeah.
Well, that's amazing. I love that you did that. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be there. Not that I knew it was happening, but looking back, now that you have it out in the world, and other people are able to watch it, what do you hope that they take away from the documentary?
I just hope that it gives people just generally, like, you know, like I said before, like we're capable of telling our own stories, but also I hope it gives people a new sort of look into like my own community, Siksika, you know, like the amazing people, the amazing stories that we have, the resilience and the beautiful things that we're capable of and that the things that we're continuing to do. So I don't know. It's kind of always hard to say, but I hope people just take something out of it and yeah.
And that it's playing 10 years from now still.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, you know, it's going to have a life of its own for sure. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Adam.
Yeah, thank you very much. I really enjoyed this conversation. Yeah, thank you.
Adam Solway is the writer and director of New Blood. He is a Blackfoot filmmaker from Siksika Nation in Alberta. The soundtrack to New Blood, the play, and the doc is Peter Gabriel's album by the same name, which features orchestral re-recordings of some of his biggest hits. Gabriel granted permission for Adam and his team to use the songs in their production. From that album, this is Wallflower. Peter Gabriel with Wallflower. You're listening to Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, U.S. Public Radio, and Data Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild.
Hi, it's Yaya. When people ask where I'm from, I say, think of the furthest place north you've ever been. Now keep going. Yep, that's us, the heart of the Arctic. I am a modern Inuk woman. I got married out of high school, started a family. Hi. Now he's the town golden boy, and I'm his wife.
That is the trailer for a new comedy TV series called North of North. The show follows a modern Inuk woman as she navigates life in the tiny Arctic community of Ice Cove. Siaya is a newly single mother, determined to forge her own path in a town which, like many small towns, is full of gossip. What is unique about this show is that North of North was shot in Iqaluit and includes the people who live there, Inuit fashion, food, culture, and of course, humor. The comedy series was created by Inuit filmmakers Stacey Egluck McDonald and Alethea Arnuk Baril after working together on the hit film The Grizzlies, also shot in Iqaluit. And Inuk actress Anna Lam plays the main character, Siaya. Welcome to Unreserved.
Thank you.
Hi.
Let's start with Stacey and Alethea. Where did the idea for North and North come from?
Stacey's twisted brain.
I understand there was also gin involved.
Oh, yes,
so
yes,
I'm looking forward to this question.
Well, there's a few answers to that, but the real main one is, you know, we'd just gotten off of 10 years of working on The Grizzlies together with our producing partner, Miranda DePoncier, and we just so enjoyed working together and learning together and being creative together. So as soon as we were done The Grizzlies, and the full promotional rollout, we kind of took a little weekend hiatus out into the country and ended up driving around the forest in golf carts, drinking gin and no
drinking,
roads.
Driving not on the road, though. On a trail on her property.
And dreaming up of what we would want to do next. And this is the one that kind of rose to the top. We loved the grizzlies and the little pockets of humor it had. But, you know, it is a heavy story. And we really wanted to tell something that was still felt real, but felt more joyful and humorous and felt more like the lives that we live every day, which is full of laughter and laughing at ourselves and poking fun at each other and just general joy.
As Stacey had produced 7 seasons of the show Khanoli, which is an Inuktitut language comedy all in our language. And so this was really, you know, in her realm. And I'm a really boring, serious documentary filmmaker. But I, you know, had just had small children and needed to take a break from directing my own films and thought I'll just support Stacey in her next comedy venture as a producer. But she gradually lured me further and further into the project as a writer and co-creator. So it was a totally new space for me and my brain. But it's been a hell of a ride and really fun.
Anna, in the trailer, your character is says she is a modern Inuk woman. What does that mean to you?
A modern Inuk woman, I feel like it, you know, I could say some like profound answer, but it's just kind of like someone, an Inuk woman that exists within our communities and is just kind of living their life as any other person would. But I feel like we sometimes have to like define ourselves as like we are modern. We're not like this idea of like a historical figure that you see in an old documentary or how we're portrayed in television generally. I just think she's a woman and she's Inuk and that's all she is.
She's a little kooky.
She's a little kooky. She's a little unhinged, but she she's a chaotic modern Inuk woman.
A chaotic modern Inuk woman.
She's making up for those 7 years she was locked in the house. Got a little messy.
It is kind of profound, though, what you say, because, you know, actually we had a working title for the show for a long time. We called it People for the longest time because, you know, our tagline when we were pitching it was, we're just people like everyone else. And Stacey came up with that title because we were talking about in different indigenous languages, often the name for yourself as a people means people. And we wanted the world to see us just like we are relatable. We're the same. You know, we're culturally different, but we're also just human beings like everyone else, and we want to be seen that way. So
struggling with the same things, relationships, motherhood, dealing with parents who have a lot of baggage.
Embarrassing moments at work, name it. We're just like everyone else.
Yeah.
Absolutely. People in the South have this certain vision, stereotypes about Inuit, as you allude to in the first episode. What are some of those stereotypes and how do you hope to counter them with North of North?
I mean, first of all, that we exist in the present day. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. Mm-hmm.
That we're connected to the world, even though we're high up and isolated, in quotes. We're very connected to pop culture. We know the movies. We know the songs. We're a part of it.
Yeah. I think a lot of people think everything's like really sad. A lot, like, and
cold.
Hard up there. Yeah. So we wanted a world of joy and warmth in the Arctic.
What makes Inuit humor unique?
Oh my goodness. I feel like it's an abundance of things. I think that there's an ability to laugh and poke fun at each other and not take it too seriously. There's a deadpanness at times. I think what was really fun about creating this show was that we wanted it to be a comedy, but it's very much character-based comedy. So each character has their own style of sense of humor. We're not like running joke after joke after joke. It's a different flavor for every character, which makes it feel very real and very like grounded comedy. And yes, there are certainly some slapstick elements, but that's because we also know people like that in our community who go for the lowest hanging fruit and like or the dad joke of it, or you know. So it felt very, the comedy feels really real to us in this show, and we tried to be very aware of that while we were writing and then again in the editing process to make it always feel like the comedy was even if it was outlandish, which outlandish things happen in the North all the time. there were times where our networks were like, we don't really believe this. And we're like, but it happened.
This actually happened. Listen, this is not unbelievable because it happened to both of us at different points in our lives.
But yeah, we always did our gut checks on the comedy. Like, does it feel real? Does it feel, you know, something that we would actually hear in our communities and in our homes and whatnot?
Yeah. Our sense of humor is unique, and I hope it shines through. And it's something that we've worked really, really carefully to find the tone of this show, which is, I think, pretty different from a lot of the comedies that have come out of Canada in the past. And I think there is this really grounded aspect to the show, but at the same time, the broad humor, like, I think shared across Inuit communities is an enjoyment of broad humor. Like, we're not afraid to laugh at fart jokes and stuff like that. Not that there's a lot of fart jokes in the show, but like, we're not afraid to laugh at those kinds of things. And like, nobody's above that kind of humor in our communities, but there's also really smart, dry humor as well. It's a mix, and it's got its own brand, and I think it's hard to describe without seeing it.
Yeah.
I also loved how you really included, you know, Inuit fashion, like with the different kinds of outfits and stuff that Anna wears, and it's really sort of ingrained and woven into the series, which I just wanted to mention because I really loved it.
Yeah, that was such a just an organic part of it. Like, it's how we dress every day.
Yeah.
So it just felt unquestionable and undeniable that that's what it had to be. It was a huge job to get it all assembled and curated for the show, but it was just an automatic, like, this is what it has to look like because it is how we dress and this is what we wear and all of that stuff. So
yeah. And we had a combo team. Actually, one of Stacey's partners on her previous comedy show is now a fashion designer, Nooks Keenan Lindell, and he apprenticed under Deborah Hansen, who's an incredible costume designer in the industry. She's done big shows like Handmaid's Tale and so on and so on. And she and Nooks had this fantastic relationship. Deborah and her whole team is incredible and super experienced in the film industry. And Nooks is already a great designer, but hadn't done costume design for TV before. So their collaboration was just one of the really cool things about this project.
And access to designers all over the North. We had parkas and cummings or like the sealskin boots and mitts and hats come in from all across, not even just Nunavut, but from the Northwest Territories. And it was a real like territorial effort to dress this show.
Wow. Did you have a lot of, you know, community people sending in, you know, their pieces to be included?
Oh, yeah, we borrowed so much rented both so much clothing.
I've seen my hats on numerous people.
So many of my earrings.
We also lent a lot of our own
jewelry.
I showed up to a table read in a parka, and Stacey, Lethe, and Miranda were like, wait, can we take a picture of this really quickly? It ended up being the parka for the opener. So.
Very cool. You all have ties to Chalwit, where the show was filmed. What was it like bringing such a large production to such, you know, a close-knit community like that?
I can say from like an actor standpoint, I'm from Iqaluit, raised there. My family's originally from Grease Fjord, but Siaya goes through so many incredibly embarrassing moments and she does some really like out-of-pocket things with an audience a lot of the time, and it would so happen that a lot of the time the background actors, the audience that we did have, were my cousins, and they were people that I went to school with, and you know, it kind of added this extra layer of like, I am actually deeply embarrassed that I have to do this in front of you, but I'm going to do it anyway because it's my job. But there was also like this really important sense of like accountability and responsibility, and that extra level of like, I am going to work my ass off and I'm going to do this well, because it's not just about me. It's about how we represent the territory and how, you know, how we represent our community, and that we ensure that when we do this show that we're not hurting anybody in the process, and that we make people feel proud and represented. So having that kind of like extra layer of I actually have people to answer to about this show when it comes out and when they see it, that made me feel, you know, even stronger about it.
Alethea, Stacey?
Well, I'm not from Iqaluit originally. I'm from another small community, but I've been living in Iqaluit for nearly 18 years, I think, by now. So it's certainly home and where I've built my found family. And I owe Iqaluit a lot in terms of my career, my child. I don't have children. I'm a child. And my friendships. And I love it so much. And, you know, from the very beginning of my career, which did start in Iqaluit, I've always done community-based filmmaking, certainly never to this degree, which was scary and different and new. And we knew that it was going to be different for our community as well. I mean, a production of this size is a bit of a machine. It has a very large footprint, and that was something that was going to be new to us. Like, we did the Grizzlies there, but this was an even larger scale. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of prepping that we had to do to prepare our community, discussions with the city of Iqaluit and finding space for a makeshift studio and relationship building and just getting everybody like on site and prepped for this. But even still, we went into it having to learn a lot and figure our way around it. And by the end of it, thankfully, it became a much smoother ship. But there was some learning that we all had to do in the first few weeks there.
Yeah. I'm born and raised in Iqaluit as well, and I was nervous too.
Yeah.
But honestly, by the end of it, I feel so freaking loved. Mm-hmm. I feel so validated. Like, people will show up for you, you know, and it just showed me that there are a lot of people out in our community that have goodwill towards us, and that was a really nice thing to learn. Like, we had to lean on our community so hard for this show in every aspect, from food to costume to closing down streets to shutting down a store to film in. Like, every little corner of the town took part in this show, and people really, like, they could either get in your way or make way for you. And I feel like our town really made way for us in a huge, huge way. And it was so touching to see people really bend over backwards to make this happen for us all.
And we're definitely feeling that excitement now, now that the trailer is out. Everybody's so excited.
Oh, I imagine the buzz is just, you know.
Yeah. I think every single Inuk in Iqaluit has shared it.
This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, U.S. Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. Danse, I'm Rosanna Deerchild. North of North is a new sitcom shot in Iqaluit by and about Inuit. My guests today are Inuk actress Anna Lam, who plays the main character Siaya, and filmmakers Stacey Egluck McDonald and Alethea Arnick Burrell. The Inuit filmmaking duo says shooting the Inuit comedy anywhere but the North was unthinkable.
It wouldn't feel real to
us. I
don't
think this show is possible outside of our community.
Yeah, I mean, right from the start, the show, the community was always an integral character in and of itself on the show, not just the location of it, but an actual character. And we wanted to feel Inuit in the background. We wanted, like, what we're going to do, like, get people from Toronto to, like, pretend.
It wasn't that long ago that that's what they would do, right? Yeah.
That felt like an impossible thing for us. Like, no.
I think once people see the show, they'll understand why we could never have done this show in Toronto or anywhere else. It just would have been, like, only our main characters are Inuit, and then, like, everybody else would have been, like, a mixture of Asian people and First Nations.
It did take a lot of convincing, though, for us to be able to do this. I mean,
we're so lucky all three of our networks really believed in the vision and the importance of that.
Yeah, because, you know, we're a fly-in community. We can't just chuck gear and whatnot to the North. Like, our set had to be build and design in advance and then torn down and then put onto an airplane and flown to Iqaluit and then reassembled. And
The crew
had to work without their usual access to all kinds of crazy film-specific equipment that they had to kind of like rig like DIY versions of them.
Yeah, we don't have transportation vans, so like the taxi company in town stepped in and helped us out for transportation for production. And
our local shawarma shop like did all the food for 3 months for a 100-person crew. Like, it was awesome.
It took a lot of creative out-of-the-box thinking, and then also a lot of Inuit crew in each department where, you know, they're not necessarily just assistants or trainees. They have special access to things and information that, you know, even our most experienced heads of departments would never know. So yeah. It took a real partnership.
Sounds fun.
Sometimes.
When it wasn't stressful, it was fun.
Yeah.
I also thought, you know, all the cultural touches that you put, you know, aside from the fashion, I'm thinking in particular of the scene where she's at the party and then they cut to people like cutting seal meat on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, and in all the languages and stuff. How did you manage to weave in all of those sort of elements? Was it organic or were you intentional about it?
That was very intentional. Yeah. And some of that meat on the floor was actual raw frozen meat. And some of it was a prop that was made to look like frozen meat because we knew we'd be filming for a while and it would start to melt. So, yeah, it was really planned ahead to make sure that it looked good and looked real. And because that is what happens at house parties. People have some country food and sit on the floor and eat it. And right next to people who are dancing to Britney Spears.
I showed it to my sister and she was like, oh, fancy party.
That's how we do in Halloween.
Yeah. Oops, I cut it again. you all are, you know, amazing and continue to bring authentic Inuit stories and characters to the screen. How do you hope your work has, you know, impacted your communities?
I hope people feel seen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And have something joyful that they can go back and watch and rewatch, you know, when they are in the mood for a little pick-me-up, you know, and to feel validated and like that you can mess up in life and still make a positive change in your community. I hope that's something that people take away and kind of revisit over the years when they need that.
Yeah, I mean, in reading the scripts and kind of understanding Siaya, I felt really seen by her. And I felt like I had an opportunity to, like, mess up and start over in many ways and kind of get that experience without actually having to do it, which is kind of nice. But it was really nice. I hope, like, there's Inuit women in particular in the community and Indigenous women in general who feel seen and who feel maybe a bit more emboldened to take risks and to try and to know that, you know, even if you really, really mess things up, you can fix it and life goes forward. And at the end of the day, as harsh as our communities can be at times, as much as I love my community, sometimes it can be really, really difficult to make mistakes in front of people. But I hope people feel like, you know, that they can do that and that there is another side to the consequences and we should have grace for ourselves and for other people. And holding space for them. And I also really hope that people in watching this show get to see the joy and the love and the sense of community that is very real, and that Inuit aren't just like, our stories don't just have to be about trauma and hardship and overcoming. Sometimes they're just a bit kooky. And that's valid as well.
I think comedy too is so special in that way, in that like comedy it's funny and it makes you laugh and it's joyful and whatnot, but it can also be really profound and have something to say. And that's my favorite type of comedy, where it has heart, a lot of heart to it. And I think that it's interesting how it allows for dialogue and space to talk about things in a way that still, if that feels safe, that feels warm, that feels like it's okay, and you know, it doesn't have to be so intellectualized or too traumatic or dark. It allows, I think, safe space for conversation to happen. And I love a comedy that pulls at the heart and you laugh and maybe even shed a tear or two. And that was definitely something that Alethea and I set out to do when we made this. We're like, we want to make people laugh and cry.
Yeah. And make you feel
and,
things.
Yeah. And fingers crossed we achieved that, but time will tell.
Yeah. And just to touch on what both Anna and Stacey just said, you know, something that Stacey and I talked about early on as well was that, I don't know about other Indigenous communities, but with Inuit communities, what we've found over the course of our lives is there's often a lot of forgiveness for men who mess up and not as much forgiveness for women.
Yep.
And we really wanted to have a really likable, warm, funny, awesome female character that really messes up sometimes and gets really messy, and to show, you know, to kind of model for our communities that, you know, her community backs her up and lets her mess up and forgives her and makes her better. Because that's what we want to see in our own communities, too.
And as women that work in what is, you know, can be a really challenging and tough business, what advice would you lend, you know, others who think these things are might be a little too impossible for them?
Well, hell, if we can do it in a remote Arctic community, anybody can.
Just don't give up. It can be really easy, too. It feels like sometimes there's a lot of roadblocks. There's a lot of, you just have to be so, I mean, insanely persistent.
Like
you have to be
a little bit insane.
You have to want it.
A little bit? I mean.
You have to really, really want it, because this space and this industry is definitely not an easy one. Mm-hmm. You have to be hungry for it, and you have to not give up. And, like, those are the two biggest things.
Like, I could think of, like, an actual 1,000 times we could have given up on this show. Mm-hmm. That we didn't, so.
Yeah,
that's what it takes to make any show, really, but especially one in a remote Native community.
Yeah. Insanity.
Essential ingredient.
And you know, like, I mean, to be very honest, I don't know if I would have survived this process without having Alethea as a partner. Mm-hmm. I think when it's such a new space and it's so, you're trying to break down doors, I think having a partner in the room has felt critical and essential. It's given us backbone. It's given us strength to really make sure our voices are heard every single step of the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Anna is an up-and-coming, amazing actress who's soon to be, no doubt, the next Julia Roberts of the North. What keeps you motivated to keep telling these stories?
I think what keeps me motivated, and this is kind of coming off of what Alethea and Stacey said, is finding and building and really, like, curating your community, the people that you lean into, because it's a really hard industry and it's terrifying. And there's, like, so many moments where things can go wrong, and you need to have people kind of in your circle who you can speak to, who you can find advice from. And who are willing to back you when things go wrong, because especially in this industry, standing up for yourself can be so scary. Mm-hmm. And who, you know, there's moments where, like, there's people that you might not want to work with, or certain things have happened, and you need to be able to, like, find that strength. And it, for me, at least, it's leaning into other people and finding their support that makes it a lot less difficult. And so, like, you know, I kind of go through, like, a quarterly crisis every year where I'm like, I can't do this anymore. I just can't deal with the rejection. I can't deal with, like, all of this stuff. But the way that I've been able to build my career is through the support of women, including Stacey and Alethea and Miranda and so many others. So that's my advice. Build a community, create a community, really foster it and give back to it. Because we all rise together.
Ah, beautiful. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Anna. Now, North of North will soon, you know, reach global audiences when it gets to Netflix. What is the most important message that you hope, you know, those that are watching will get from North of North?
I think the most important thing for me is to really get across the message of, like, I want people to see Inuit as Inuit and, you know, translate that to Inuit as people. Like Stacey and Alethea had originally kind of had the show called for a time being, you know, people. We're just people. And we exist and we deserve our time and space as well.
Alethea, Stacey?
I think for me, something that we really wanted to celebrate with this show is our sense of community. And particularly coming out of the pandemic, I think even non-Indigenous people, people all over the world, in urban spaces as well, who hadn't thought so much about who their community is, were suddenly very hyper aware of who they can lean on, who's there for them. Maintaining connection took more effort. And it's something that I think for all our warts and pimples, small towns really know how to do well. Because sometimes you don't have a choice when you live in a fishbowl. You're connected to your enemies and your frenemies, and you see them at the grocery store, you see them at the post office. Like, you just know everybody anyway, and you don't have a choice but to be in your community. So by nature of living in that kind of space, we know how to be in community and be there for each other, even when someone has pissed you off. 1 week, the next week, you're showing up there when they've lost a loved one. You know, when somebody's really frustrated you at work, then you see them at dinner at your cousin's house the next day. It's like, you know, that's just, you have to learn how to exist with people you don't necessarily agree with all the time. And I think that the whole world, in particularly city folk, could learn a lot about how we exist together in that way. And, you know, you see so much about politics in the world right now and how polarizing it all is. And we learn how to see each other as humans, even when we disagree, in small towns. And I think that's something rural communities can teach city folk. Mm.
I don't have much to add other than, like, one of the things that makes me so proud of being Inuk and being from the north is, you know, how we can be modern and participate in a modern world and be connected to it, but still be able to, like, go out on the land hunting and feel connection to the land and animals and our spirituality. And, you know, those are things, that concepts that continuously pop up throughout the show, because that is how we live our lives. We're both. And I'm just really curious about how the world is going to respond to that. I hope they take some inspiration from it. You know, it is important to be connected to land. It is important to be connected to animals. I think the world would be much better off if we all were.
Well, to borrow a line from the show, thank you for sharing your traditional knowledge with me.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Thank
you. Just had
you.
To sneak that in there. North of North follows a young Inuk mother's journey to change her life and forge a new path for her future. Stacey Egluck McDonald and Alethea Arnuk Baril are the creators and showrunners, and Anna Lam is the lead actress. North of North premieres on January 7th on CBC and APTN. It will be available on Netflix in spring 2025. That's all our time on Radio Indigenous. This episode was produced by Rhiannon Johnson, Kim Kasher, Elena Hudgens-Lyle, and Bridget Stringer-Holden. Check us out now, streaming live on the CBC News app. Just go to the local tab and press play. You can also find and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm your favorite cousin, Rosanna Deerchild, coming at you from Winnipeg in Treaty One territory. You didn't ask him it now, well, I guess.